whenever I start a talk, especially since I'm from Phoenix and we reuse a lot of water in Phoenix, and the reason I'll ask, how many rivers can you see in that picture? That's a picture of Phoenix. And these aren't little rivers. These are, so for Arizona, they're major rivers. There are three. Right over here is the Agua Fria. That's the Salt River. And down here is the Gila River. Now, I'll always say that also, most people think if you put a river on the map or you name a river, there's water in the river. We don't have water in our rivers. You have a little bit right here, and I don't know how many of you have been to Phoenix, but this is Tempe Town Lakes. So that's man-made. But then, if you look right here, this is that same river. Here's the Agua Fria. The Gila's coming in here. Here's the Salt. Right there with that box, you'll notice the river starts again. So here's the river. And this is the 91st Avenue Sewer Treatment Plant. So you hear a lot of people talk about effluent-dominated streams. Well, ours are effluent streams. So yesterday, I don't know how many of you saw the talk that Lonnie Frost gave about the riparian preserve in Gilbert, Arizona, but the research I'm doing is related to the riparian preserve. Total, there's 67.2 acres of recharge area. The total permit for recharge is about 8 million gallons a day. The depth to the groundwater before they started recharging was 168 feet, and that was in 1998. Right now, the last data I saw was from, I think, July, and the depth to groundwater now is 148.7 feet. So, in essence, since 1998 till now, they've increased the level of the groundwater under the riparian preserve by about 20 feet. Also, to date, there have been about 37,000 acre-feet of water recharged at this location. So here's the riparian preserve, and you'll notice here's the Eastern Canal, and right next to the canal is a drinking water plant. That drinking water plant is there to be able to treat the water from the canal. Also, there'll be opportunity for, if you need to take groundwater, any water that's recharged from these basins can then be taken back up, treated, and put back out in the distribution system. For those of you who didn't hear the talk yesterday that kind of went over the area in detail, I'll just really quickly, this is a multi-purpose use facility. Here's a library with a permanent lake. This lake, though, is not filled with effluent. It's filled with groundwater. Then we have seven basins that they can recharge water through. The basin I worked with is the one that's right here. Here's the lake. This is basin 7. One of the things you'll notice from this is they have these areas of, this basin right now is dry. They have an area of water that is always there. It's kind of a refuge area for fish, any aquatic wildlife that are in the basins. This is a place for them to retreat to as the basin infiltrates and have a place where they can live and then come back out when they start to add water again. They have some islands that are up in the middle where waterfowl and things lay eggs and that. In fact, I can tell you, when I was there this last spring, one of the things that happens is some Canadian geese laid their eggs there. The basin infiltrated. There's no longer any water. Now it's dry. And then the geese have to fend off people, cats, all sorts of things to try and take care of their eggs. And if you get anywhere close to them, they'll come after you. So the way the basins are actually operated, they'll fill the basin with a foot of water, and then they turn the water off and they let the water infiltrate. And that amount of water, the foot will take anywhere between, a week to 10 days to infiltrate. After it's infiltrated, they let it dry, and you'll see they get a lot of weeds coming up. They let it dry until you can actually get back out onto the basin with equipment. They'll then disc it. And you can see here, they only just run the disc over once, mostly for weed control. And it also helps to open the soil surface back up if they've had any crusting to keep the infiltration rate higher. And then about once or twice a year, they will go through and they will deep rip. And the deep ripper will go through and they try to get down to about 30 inches, but oftentimes the operator said that he can only get the ripper down to about 24 inches. But they'll do that once or twice a year to keep the ground open because the whole point to this is they're trying to really increase recharge. So what we did is we chose some points. Each one of those data points, or each of the green points on the screen, is a sample location where we went out and we'll sample. We sample with the Giddings probe. It's a 4-inch Giddings probe, which sometimes can get a little hard to get through the ground. But the reason we do that is we're trying to get as undisturbed as possible interior sample that we can take from. So after we've taken it, we cap it, we quickly get it back to the lab. Once it's in the lab, we cut the plastic sleeve off the top. We then take and section it to whatever depths we want, and very carefully, and every time we go to the next section, we go to new spatulas and everything so that we can really clean them well in between. Because we're talking about very low concentrations. We don't want to have carryover contamination. So then all we do is we'll take about the center inch out for our samples. The remainder of what's around the outside we'll end up using for just typical analyses like soil texture, organic carbon, those sorts of analyses. So we sampled in May of 2009 and May of 2010. The cores were sectioned, and after they were sectioned, we freeze-dried them. The dried soils were extracted using an accelerated extraction device. Our method was we took a centimeter of sand, put in the extraction cells, and then we mixed 15 grams of dry soil, well mixed with hydromatrix, which is in essence a pelletized diatomaceous earth. The reason we have to use that is if we didn't use it, we tried to go without using the hydromatrix and just use soil. We ended up being able to get higher concentrations coming out in in the sample. The problem was about 1 in 3 samples would plug. So the hydromatrix stopped the plugging. The remainder of the cell was filled with sand. The run on the ACE would use a static for 5 minutes just to get everything up to temperature. We would flush with 60% volume. We did 3 cycles with 25% methanol, 75% water. We would then purge with nitrogen for 100 seconds. We ran them at a pressure of 1500 psi and a temperature of 100 C. Once we got the sample at the bottom of the ACE, we would then we needed to clean it up so we could use it on the LC mass spec. And our cleanup procedure used Strata X SPE. And the thing that was nice about this is we found we could go up to about 10% organic solvent and still have the Strata X remove the compound from the solution. So what we would do is we'd take out of the bottom of the, well, first we'd condition the Strata X with methanol and then with NanoPure water. We would take the ACE extracts that we got, we would dilute them to about 400 milliliters with NanoPure water, because we would end up getting about 40 mils out of each cell. So when we diluted them, we were down to at least below 10%, since we were using a majority of our extract was still water. Then we could run them through the SPE. The SPE would take out the contaminants of concern, but let all of the more water-soluble things that can clog our columns go through. We'd wash it 2 times with 3 mils of water. We'd dry it for a minute and then elute with 3 mils of methanol followed by 3 mils of acetonitrile. That would get everything off. We'd evaporate to dryness under N2 gas, and then we would reconstitute it in methanol and water. But one thing we found when we would try and reconstitute it is, first off, we had to have this 20% methanol, 80% water that we were reconstituted in, because if we didn't, then we ended up getting two peaks on lincomycin on our LCMS, because the first peak would just come flying through because we had too much organic in the actual sample. So if we then, but if we used a 20%, 80% mix to just reconstitute it, a lot of some of the compounds wouldn't come back into solution. So what we'd do is we'd reconstitute first with the methanol, get everything that wouldn't come out in the water, and then add the water, and that seemed to give us fairly good recoveries. So the analysis we used, LCMS, MS. For lincomycin, we looked at the 407 to 126 transition. For caffeine, the 194 to 137, and for carbamazepine, the 237 to 194. I don't have up on there ibuprofen, and the reason is because in all of our samples, we didn't find a single sample where we got ibuprofen out. And I was expecting that if we hadn't used much effluent, you know, if it had only been a few years of effluent, because ibuprofen has such a low water solubility. But I thought after 12 years of using effluent, we would see some ibuprofen, but we never found any ibuprofen in any of our samples. So just to look at some of the data, I took the concentration, I put it into ArcGIS, and I kriged it just to kind of get a visual look at what the concentration profiles look like. So this is for caffeine. The darkest black on there is 2.25 nanograms per gram caffeine per gram of soil, and an absolute white is 0.1. So this goes to show that, as we'd expect for caffeine, high concentration in the surface at 50 centimeters deep, there's hardly any caffeine that's made it that deep, at least in 2009. In 2010, however, our concentrations are much lower than they were in 2009, just overall. And the one thing you will notice is here, here, and here, we have really high concentrations at depth. Well, I'm pretty sure the reason we have really high concentrations at depth is in 2009, when we sampled, we didn't refill the holes. So in essence, what if you watch these basins fill, they don't fill just all at once. What ends up happening is the low spots, the water finds its low spots, and if I went back out there and looked at the elevations, chances are the low spots are all right where those holes are. So for a long time, they're just pouring in, and eventually it fills back in, and then you don't have the problem. Plus, since this is all effluent, you know there are all sorts of different temporal patterns of the concentrations that are coming out of the effluent. Therefore, depending on what time of day they were filled, you don't know. But one thing this does say is that, at least with caffeine at this site, it appears that since the concentrations are lower in 2010 than 2009, there's some attenuation going on, whether it's microbiologically degraded, being irreversibly sorbed. I'm not sure, but since in 2009 the concentration was very high at 50 centimeters, I'm fairly confident in saying that we're not getting real deep. It's not just being moved out. And we're doing it again this year, so after 3 years we'll be able to tell a little bit better what the actual concentrations are doing. For carbamazepine, again, we have a situation where at 50 centimeters, though, you'll notice down here, we're starting to actually get some concentration of carbamazepine, which is sort of typical of what you'd expect from carbamazepine, because it doesn't really degrade that well. And so we're actually finding it moving deeper in the soil profile. 2010 as well, and again, you'll find that down at that same location where in 2009 it was high concentration, it's again increasing its concentration in 2010. For lincomycin, this is this by far had the lowest concentration of anything that we looked at. And one of the things that can be a concern about lincomycin is it has a pKa at about 7.3. So depending on, and we our soil or our waters or and soils both have a lot of salinity in them. So if you get below that pKa and you turn it into a positive ion, typically you'd expect, okay, it's going to sorb to the cation exchange complex. But because we have so much salinity in the water, that just overwhelms the lincomycin, and the lincomycin becomes very mobile. So I'm not sure if we're just seeing what the concentration is and it's just always going to be there, or if we'll start to see some sort of accumulation. Because again, in 2010, and again, you'll see down here our holes that we didn't fill up. There's that's what makes me think, because if you looked, this one location here, all three compounds had a high concentration at that hole. So then one thing I looked at was, I wanted to see what in the soils might be stopping the different compounds from moving. So one of the things I looked at was I took my organic carbon content, I normalized it, so I took the highest organic carbon content I got from 2009, and I made that, in essence, I divided by that number, so all my organic carbon content now numbers will be lower than one. I did the same thing with the constituent of interest. Then I took those concentrations and I added them together. Then when I kriged the data and plotted it, I put the white would be 0 and black would be 2. So if the contours are kind of gray, that means that you may have had a high organic carbon content, a low constituent content, or a high constituent content, low organic carbon content, or somewhere in the middle. So there's no real connection between them. And with caffeine, as you can see, this is pretty much just gray. These numbers fell between 0.8 and 1.3, which means there's no real connection between caffeine movement and organic carbon content. However, when we went to carbamazepine, if you'll notice, right in through here, you're starting to get the situation where both the organic carbon content is high and the carbamazepine content is low, or the carbamazepine content is high and the organic carbon content is low. And all those, when you go back and you actually look at the data, that's what's happening. That in through here, some of these locations have high carbamazepine concentration but low organic carbon, and some of these locations have high carbamazepine concentration, you know, the opposite. So in essence, you're not getting that they're not being held up, or they're being let go. Lincomycin was a lot like caffeine, a little bit more indication that it might be organic carbon that's holding these things back. And both lincomycin and carbamazepine do have KDs for these soils around 10, which is kind of hitting that region of maybe mobile, maybe not mobile. So to finally sum up, if you take all the data points across the whole pond, and the soil textures along in this were pretty similar, they were either clay loams or sandy clay loams. And if you look at all of the samples pooled together, the error bars are one standard error from the mean. At 5 centimeters, you can see here for lincomycin that it looks like over time, the lincomycin is actually increasing in concentration. So the 2009 concentration was lower than the 2010, and we'll know once we get the 2011 data if that trend continues. As well as not just at the 5 centimeter, but the 15 centimeter. By the time you get down to 50 centimeters, there pretty much doesn't seem to be any difference between the 2009-2010 data. For carbamazepine, it looks a little different. One thing that's interesting is the fact that the surface was lower than depth. And part of that might be due to the fact that the top 6 inches of this soil gets worked often. So in essence, what's happening is that top 6 inches is getting turned over. So your real accumulation is going to start being down here just below that plow layer. The other thing that's interesting about this is that in general, there's no correlation between, it doesn't look like carbamazepine is necessarily increasing in concentration, which would lend more credence to the idea that maybe the carbamazepine is just sort of on a continuous basis being continually added and some of it's being leached out. And then for caffeine, it's clear that for caffeine, it's just increasing over time. And this is, as far as concentrations, caffeine was by far the highest concentration that we had of anything that was in the water. So in conclusions, the caffeine concentration is increasing year to year. The carbamazepine concentrations show no evidence of accumulation. The lincomycin concentrations also appear to be increasing year to year, but it's a little more tenuous as far as how much it's actually increasing. And then again, ibuprofen, we didn't find any ibuprofen in any of the samples. So with that, I'd like to thank the town of Gilbert for giving us access to the site, and then Alan Knopf and Colin Breslin, my technicians, for the sampling and analysis. With that, I'll take questions.
Clint, you mentioned that you are cultivating it every year about 30 inches. I mean, that's quite a bit of mixing.
Well, it's not really a cultivation. Okay. They're just taking a ripper that has two bars on it. And they're just pulling those two bars through. So if you go out and you look after they've done it, it really doesn't turn the soil a lot. It lifts it a little bit because they don't have any crossbars underneath. They're just trying to break any sort of layering that's forming at the plow layer to stopping their infiltration.
What's the fate of the groundwater? Do you think the groundwater can continue to be used?
I hope so. I drink it.
So people are not going to use groundwater.
The guy who uses it is right there. He's the director of public works.
The wells in the area are typically perforated from about 500 feet down. The geology in this area, you go through about 70 feet of the sandy clay sands, and then you transition to the old Salt River bed that used to come around the south side. You transition at that point from about 70 feet down to about 300, you have very open gravels and cobbles and sands, and then you go into a confining layer. So it'll be a while before this makes its way down to the 500-foot level that our typical wells will be pulling water out and drinking.
So there'll be no regulations against that? Or?
I'm not sure how that's going.
Right now there aren't.
Also for the recharge, do the regulations require you to blend with stone water or some other water? Or just,
okay. Go ahead. You said the drinking water plant was immediately adjacent to where this wastewater was being applied. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. But like you say, 500 feet, you're cased down on your drinking water. So
we have a well on that site by the plant, and right now that has been in operation for about 22 years. Looking very good quality water out of that, meets all the standards. The plant, actually, we pull water out of the canal that sources off the Salt Verde Rivers, and then is CAP, Colorado River Water, brought it through that canal as well to us. But the plant currently is not treating groundwater.
But it's there so that in the future it could.
We're just thinking about the conversation. Isn't the idea that the water that is percolating down is recharging groundwater and that it is safe to drink once it gets to groundwater? Isn't that the idea, Monty?
That is the idea. Gilbert bears a legacy of agriculture, so the upper aquifer is not typically used for drinking water because it's high in nitrates, very high in TDS. But as it moves down, Mother Nature tends to clean it up. We go through the vagal zone and other things. So we're actually improving the groundwater by doing recharge here. What we're seeing for nitrates and TDS and other things.
Follow-up question. I thought I heard you say that caffeine was lower in 2010 than 9.
No, sorry. It was higher in 2010. It was clearly increasing over as time was going on.
So what we're going to do is we're going to get that caffeine in the groundwater, and then we don't have to buy coffee, right?
We'll see.
Well, with that, they don't drink water for breakfast.
You mentioned you will be repeating this sampling next year. What's your long-term treatment? Add more
analysis?
Well, at this point, we're going to sample again in 2011, see how those numbers come back. And the next thing to do to really connect it is try and put in some samplers that we can draw some water out of the groundwater while it's recharging to see what the water concentration is as it hits there.
Have you thought about using some kind of a conservative tracer which is already in the water, try to see how much might be going into the groundwater?
The one thing I've looked at to try and use is fluoride.
Okay.
But the problem I have at this point is I'm not exactly sure what's going to, if the soils have much fluoride in them, because there are places around that have a significant amount of fluoride. Since we're recharging an aquifer that someday might be used for groundwater, for drinking, it's kind of hard to put tracers in it.
No, but you have fluoride. I mean, everybody uses fluoride in the toothpaste.
So that's the thing, is we need to figure out we need to go through and do a more detailed survey of the soils to see if there's any background fluoride to find out, are you measuring a tracer or are you measuring just what's there?
So as you've continued to take these deep soil cores with the Giddings, at no time have you attempted to refill these holes?
Oh, we did the last time.
Okay. All right. Because I've got a lot of concerns about the validity of data for which you have direct conduits.
No,
and how can you...
The thing is after we did the Giddings, the sampling, they then came back after us and re-disked the field.
So the first
6 inches, that's what happened. But if you look, I don't think we had a conduit in all the locations, just in a few. But this year when we did it, we actually filled the soil back in. We took a little bit of the soil of the surface around, crushed it up, and sent it back down.
Not like using sand bentonite mixtures or anything like that?
No, because this time when I go to sample, we'll probably move over. From the last sampling point, we'll probably move over, 30 centimeters. So we're in the same general area, but if you look at how far this is moving, if you look at the at most of them, 50 centimeters, we're removing a fair amount of it. So if you repack the hole and you're 30 centimeters away, you're still as far away as the surface anyway.
Water applied is tertiary treated.
Yeah. I don't know if your permit's 3, is it 10?
About 5.
We do denitrify as well.
Right, so this is better quality water than the surficial groundwater because of the salts and the nitrate already there. So this is better water for you than any surficial water you might have.
We know that when we pull this water back out, it'll have to go through some sort of a treatment process.
Yeah.
That's good.